Hey, folks. One of our sponsors today, one of our favorite sponsors, happens to be SunsetLakeCBD.com. And we are in their special non-Black Friday mode, SunsetLakeCBD.com. And the Majority Report teaming up to turn America's most consumerist holiday, now we're on, I guess, Cyber Monday, into a fundraising opportunity for a great organization. And here's how it's working. If you go and visit SunsetLakeCBD.com right now, until December 1st, all CBD products will be between 30 and 60% off. You do not need a coupon code for this. All products, 30 to 60% off. And orders over $100, because they anticipate a lot of people are going to want to stock up during this sale, will receive a free jar of their delicious CBD gummies.
I love those. I'm out.
A $40 value for free. So I'm trying to do the math here, but if you buy $100 worth of stuff, normally that would cost you anywhere from $130 to $160, and you get another $40. You're talking anywhere from a $100 to a $70 savings. Do not quote me on that, because I don't trust my math skills, but it sort of feels like that. Their products are amazing. The products are just simply amazing. I gave a bunch of gifts of the fudge over the past week, sort of like pre-Hanukkah gifts, and also some Thanksgiving gifts, people I'm not going to see. And I leaned heavily on the CBD tincture to go to sleep. But they also have the rub with the arnica. They have the smokables. They have the infused coffee. Great products. Great integrity in what they grow. You can see the third-party analysis of what's in everything you buy on their website. Great agricultural practices, great business practices, and they do stuff like this. Sunset Lake CBD will donate 10% of their sales during this sale to givedirectly.org. You've heard me talk about Give Directly in the past, International Anti-Poverty Organization. What it does, they send cash directly to people in need to choose for themselves how to spend the money, allows them a certain amount of dignity and, frankly, efficiency. They know what they need the money for. All the studies have shown the most effective way to get people out of extreme poverty, give them cash. On top of that, the Majority Report is going to match that 10% donation. So hopefully we're going to be given a bunch of money to givedirectly.org. Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned business. They have donated more than $16,000 this year to things like anti-drug war organizations, to animal shelters, union funds, strike funds, nature conservation. They've given it to food pantries and refugee resettlement organizations via our fundraiser for those Afghan refugees. Again, visit SunsetLakeCBD.com to take advantage of these huge, huge discounts and help them and us raise some money for a great organization. Sale ends December 1st, so do it. Speaking of do it, let's do it with the show, Matt.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Monday, November 29th, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Omicron. poised to be the thing that we talk about for the next 6 months.
Well, it's also the guest on the show.
Exactly.
That's what it made it sound like.
We've got Omicron will be here today.
Omicron.
Senate, meanwhile, back in session, House coming tomorrow. Build Back Better bill, debt ceiling, continuing resolution for the budget, National Defense Authorization Act, January 6th commissions. Going to be a lot of stuff to talk about over the next couple of weeks. In addition, oral arguments, Supreme Court begins in the Mississippi case, which could further shred, if not kill, Roe v. Wade. Speaking of the January 6th commission, they are now ramping up the pace of contempt hearings and issuing of subpoenas, and some of those witnesses are starting to crack a little. Hopes for a type 1 diabetes cure are raised. Still about 5 years off, but some initial good results. Just thought we'd throw in some happy news. Speaking of which, leftist Xiomara Castro, not pronouncing her first name correctly, I think, headed to a landslide in the Honduran presidential elections. That's good news. Matt McConaughey, dazed, but not confused.
Yikes.
Won't run for Texas governor. You got to hold your yikes to the end of the line, at least.
It was anticipatory.
I know it. Jack Dorsey resigns from Twitter. Can't wait to find out the real reason for that. Iran clamps down on water shortage protests as the failure to repair the Iran deal begins to shape a new dynamic with the U.S. We'll talk about that and a couple of stories that we missed from the end of last week and more on today's Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to us and maybe to you from your Thanksgiving travels. I'd also like to welcome back Emma Vigeland, who was already annoyed by my headlines.
Not even annoyed. I asked Sam if he could name one other Matthew McConaughey movie before the show started, and let's see if you can do it now.
The space one.
We talked about it at length, that space one.
I can't remember the name of it.
How stupid that space one was.
Well, I feel like you said that love is the fifth dimension.
Yeah.
And,
spoiler alert.
That's what Sam's always saying on the show.
I mean, that's what I, it's the way.
That's what you believe?
That's just one of the words, one of my watchwords.
And Sam's, you've always said you don't have any tattoos, but if you were to get a tattoo, it would say
love is the fifth dimension.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, it is amazing how many opportunities there are in my life to be questioned, and I'm not going to say derided, because I think it's obviously, it's not derision about, like, you can't name, you don't know who that is, you can't name an extra movie, the only movie reference you have is from 1992, and yeah, all right,
yeah,
it's true.
Also, elephant in the room, haircut.
Yeah. Yep. I got a haircut. I got my first haircut since COVID that was done by somebody other than me in a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And you have in the past criticized my methodology of cutting my hair, which is I look into the camera and I see that there's something sticking up and I cut it.
Yeah. You grab like paper scissors from your mug there.
And right before the show.
Right before the show. And you cut it as you look into the camera. Yeah. I mean, it's not crazy that I find that to be a little nuts.
I just want to quote from the professional hair cutter that I went to this weekend. I splurged big time.
Mm.
I paid a significant amount of money for the haircut, much
really?
More than I normally do.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yes.
I would like to know, maybe off air.
It was, let me put it this way. It was over my normal $25.
Whoa.
And that I consider to be high.
That's
basically double.
I got a haircut. Shout out to Barber Station, Mandan, North Dakota. That's what they're paying in Mandan these days.
$25?
$25, yeah.
Damn. You can still find a good, I think, $25 haircut in Brooklyn.
I've never.
But I figure, one, if I amateurize it over the past the course of the past 2 years, so I paid $60 for a haircut.
Wow.
Yep.
Jesus Christ, being a man is so much easier than being a woman.
But she did say, because I told her, I said, I was a little sheepish. I was like, it may look like I've been, you know, on the lamb or something like that, or, you know, cutting with the razor blade. And she said, no, you actually did a pretty good job, except for in the back. Apparently, the left side in the back was significantly longer than the right
side. The back is hard.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even try.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't show up in the mirror.
Well, when I'm even doing my hair, like, as a, you know, like, styling it, I sometimes just, you guys don't see the back, so I'm not going to try that hard.
Just wanted to get that out of the way. Also wanted to thank, I've had a birthday this past week, and appreciate all of the happy birthday notices. I am now 78 years old.
No.
And so I want to thank everyone for wishing me happy birthday. But many of you, and I am not going to name names, and in fact, most of the people around me, people who I assume love me, did not wish me a happy sorry to Mike Cernovich day, which also happens to fall on my birthday. You will recall, was it five years ago? 2017. No, it was 2017. Yeah. On November 28th, 2017, I was in Key Food getting some paper plates for the birthday celebration I was about to have in my house. I was going to have two couples over, and I had ordered Chinese food, and that was going to be the big birthday celebration. And I get a phone call from MSNBC. I could see it was MSNBC on my, you know, I didn't know who it was, but I could see it was like the Rockefeller Center like exchange. And I'm like, I'm going to tell them I cannot do the show tonight. Sorry. But it turned out to be a public relations. Do you know who Mike Cernovich is? Yeah. Did you tweet out in 2009 the tweet, I don't care about Roman Polanski, but if my daughter is ever raped, I hope it's by a much older man who has a great sense of mise-en-scene. And I said, yes, in fact, I did. It's a pretty good tweet. But I just deleted it because I saw some weird people like retweeting it, and now I know why. He goes, well, it's retweeted by Donald Trump Jr. And I was like, well,
he was really plugged into those guys.
Yeah. And I was like, well, all you need to do is go back and see all the other tweets that I did at that time. This was in response to a petition that was going around signed by some of my friends from show business back in 2009. I was very much closer to, you know, that world than I am today. Some directors, and I was pissed because I don't think a guy who sexually assaulted, raped, drugged her, had agreed to a plea deal, skipped the country. I don't think he should be let back into the country to get a lifetime achievement award or whatever it was, simply and be allowed to not be held accountable for skipping out of the country just because he's a great director. I mean, I think he's a great director, but I also think that he's a criminal and should not be allowed to come back into the country. And I think if you read that, you will see that I am no one, even if they were a psycho and wanted to be able to pick their daughter's rapist, would say one of the things is they have to have a great sense of mise-en-scene. Like, I don't think I've ever even used those words in anything but a joke in my entire
life.
Pretty
classic joke structure.
And he said, well, could you write this up and send it to me? And so I went back, and before we had the birthday dinner, I wrote it up, sent it to them, and then over the course of the week, they ended up sort of firing me, and it was reported that they fired me, and then all hell broke loose. But in the final end, the real main question was to the whole event was offered by this guy, Mike Cernovich. Let's run that tape where he asks the key question.
Who's laughing now, Sam?
Yes, well, I still continue to laugh because I was rehired, and in fact, it really was sort of the last successful thing or thing that Mike Cernovich did in that.
Yeah, where is he now?
Up until the Crowder thing, that was our biggest like sort of single rise in subscribers, I think, on YouTube. Like, the metrics just went off the charts thanks to Mike, so we appreciate the marketing he did for us.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And personally, I mean, it was one of the best experiences of my life.
Yes.
I heard from a wide array of people. It became an issue for people, for journalists who were worried, for people who didn't want the alt-right to be able to sort of dictate things like this. You know, the idea that people can comb through tweets. And look, I have no problem with people having to account for things that they've put out in the public. But by any standard, that is a piece of satire, and B, one that criticizes rape apologists. And everybody knew it. That was the thing, is that everybody knew it. And I mean, I think we had some anti-rape activists who were like, this is like the 0.01% of rape jokes, or the use of rape in a joke, that is actually valid, because it was attacking rape apologists. And so it worked out quite well.
It's
this is the annual thank you, right, Mike Cernovich Day.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wonder how long they can stretch this accusing their political opponents of being pedophiles thing, because like they're still attempting to do so, because they know it has such a chilling effect. It's literally like the only way that these ghouls can morally posture is to like pick the worst, most morally reprehensible attribute and pin it on somebody, however disingenuously. And so like then everything is justified, right?
Right. Well, this was also in the midst of a massive YouTube Me Too moment.
Yeah.
And there was also who was that guy from NBC? Matt Lauer was also getting it. And we had coincidentally in 2012 done a video about Matt Lauer when he was talking to Anne Hathaway, and I, you know, in this video I had said like, this guy's a freaking creep, and something else is going to come out about this guy.
What was he doing
with the Anne Hathaway?
Yeah,
Anne Hathaway, like some guy had taken a picture of her, you know, paparazzi, and stuck his camera up her skirt, and it was a horrible, you know, violation. And she comes on to the Today Show, and Matt Lauer starts up with going like, "Seen a real lot of you these days."
Oh,
and it
man.
Was just the creepiest mother effing thing I could ever imagine even contemplating saying. And
yikes.
And like in any context, to someone like, you know, it's not like this is his best friend. And you know,
but that was super common. Again, we're going totally off the rails. I'll just say that was super common in like mid-2000s. I mean, 2007. There needs to be some sort of documentary or thesis about paparazzi culture. I mean, we're starting it with the Britney Spears conversation, but what that said about society.
Well, that was 2012. I think you're talking about the sexism, but
yeah.
But so just coincidentally, we had done a video, and I was like, this guy's you know, a creep. I mean, something there's more behind this than that. Video did virtually nothing, but then at that time it had got about 2 million views in that same week with Cernovich. And so it all was sort of, but that was it. It was thank you, Mike Cernovich.
Happy
wherever you are, whatever gorilla mind tricks you're selling online these days. All right, let's just play this clip of Lauren Boebert, and we'll get into this stuff here. This happened, I guess, last Thursday. Was it Thursday?
That's when it was released. I think it was over the Thanksgiving break.
It was over the break. I think it was the day before. She is, I mean, look, this is, and we played that clip of that local newscaster who made a really good point, which is, you know, she's so horrific that we give her a break because we lower the standards for her. And that, and therefore we make, we don't apply the same level of standards, but you have to. You have to, because it's not just about Laura Boebert. Who cares about her? The issue is she is a rising star in the Republican Party, you must see what the Republican Party is about, because it doesn't just end with Ilhan Omar. Play this.
Actually, I have an Ilhan story for you. So, the other night on the House floor was not my first jihad squad moment. So I was getting into an elevator with one of my staffers, and he and I were leaving the Capitol. We're going back to my office, and we get in the elevator, and I see a Capitol police officer running hurriedly to the elevator. I see fret all over his face. And he's reaching, and I'm like, "What? I can't, the door's shutting. Like, I can't open it. Like, what's happening?" I look to my left, and there she is, Ilhan Omar. Whoops. And I said, "Well, she doesn't have a backpack. We should be fine." So we only had one floor to go, and I was like, "Do I say it or not?" I looked over, and I said, "Oh, look. The Jihad Squad decided to show up for work today." Don't worry, it's just her staffers on Twitter that talk for her. She's not tough in person. She doesn't, yes. So, there's a little bit of interactions with these folks there.
She's not tough in person. She's like literally living in a refugee camp.
Yeah, right. I would love for like Lauren Boebert to switch bodies with her a la Freaky Friday style for like one day and see how she fares.
And so, you know, the point is that Lauren Boebert doesn't go out there and say things like Jihad Squad. And
she said it twice in that. Yep. Like it's a catchphrase.
Well, no, yep. She had already said it 2 days before on the House floor as a part of her speech.
And we should say that she's not saying this because she wants views on YouTube from shows like ours. She's saying this because it resonates with the people in that room. And it resonates with the millions of people who are on these email lists. And it's her way of building her relevance in the Republican Party, and it should tell you everything you need to know about the Republican Party. It just goes round and round. The Jihad Squad. And, you know, it's Muslims, it's women of color. And I mean, this is part of the party. This is part of what brings their people out to vote. Get a vote against the Jihad Squad.
Yeah, I mean, we've mentioned it countless times, but Marjorie Taylor Greene, one of the top fundraisers in the Republican Party, and Boebert wants a slice of that pie. So the way she's going to market herself is create these viral moments where she's super, super racist about Ilhan Omar, and then everyone's going to condemn it. It'll get more publicity, and they should condemn it. It's appropriate, but that's the incentive structure for her.
But let's be clear. You don't have to take it from me that it's this appeals to the Republican Party. And it's not just everybody's going to condemn it. Here's clip number two. This is the Pueblo County Republican chair, Robert Leverington. This is audio from a conversation with KRDO News in Colorado.
I feel that Congresswoman Boebert probably expressed the sentiment of many Americans. This Congresswoman Omar has been poking her finger in the eyes of many Americans over the last couple of years, and we're sick of it.
I mean, first off, on day one, they were talking about Ilhan Omar as being non-congressional because she's a Muslim woman.
And birtherism with the whole like incest lie about
her. Right.
But I don't even know what that means, poking her eye in Americans.
Oh, because she dares to have a critique of American empire, and she is non-white, and she's a woman, and she's from a different country. She was born in a different country, so it's very offensive.
And it makes it much easier, of course, rather than saying, hey, you seem to be, you know, poking your eye. You seem to be an eye poker as opposed to jihadist.
But it's all part of the same stuff, right? There's something about her that's inherently not like us.
Of course.
And so she must be some sort of infiltrator or traitor or, you know, let's make a joke about the fact that she's going to bomb the Capitol building.
And she wants Boebert censured, and it's unclear what the Pelosi is going to do about that. I just don't know how you can in any way allow a congresswoman, congressman, to say about another congresswoman or congressman, or frankly any Americans, jihad squad. I just don't know how you can allow that. And I mean, you can't stop them from doing it, but you can register, hey, this is a problem. I mean, again, we're in the same situation with the Democratic leadership. Put aside for even just one moment the question of ideology. They ostensibly are practicing politics, and they need to indicate to the American public that there is something wrong with the Republican Party. And it is almost as if, like, well, they go out and they publicly say, we need a strong Republican Party. Well, I got news for you, dude. It's not there. And so your job now is to make the American public realize there are no two options to vote for. You can't vote for the Republican Party. You got to vote for the Democrats, because we need a strong Republican Party, but there is no building one.
But that's the issue. They're going to try to censure. I mean, one, they should censure it. Censure Boebert. But look at how this moment was born. It was born on the floor of a hearing or the procedure to censure Gosar for a video where he depicted killing AOC. It was the Attack on Titan parody, right? So it's like a censure within a censure. They're taking this opportunity is their moment to shine. Gosar did it, and now Boebert's going to do it. And I have no faith that Pelosi's going to tie them to the Republicans in general and might just other them. I mean, and that's my fear.
It's incumbent on Pelosi to do something, I would say. I'm not confident that she will, but after she did go out of her way to, join
Throw
in with
Omar
the
under
Omar
the bus.
Is
yeah.
anti-Semitic thing that's, right. I think, fed into this stuff.
Yep. Exactly. Without a doubt. People forget that. They stepped all over their HR1. Rollout back in 2018, because they were so insistent on distancing themselves from Ilhan Omar's comments, which were aside from being completely appropriate in my estimation, they were not materially different from things that, like, Tom Friedman has said. One of the few times I think Tom Friedman got something right. So this is an F up, a long time F up, frankly, by the Democrats. All right, we got to take, we don't have to take anything. We got a couple of sponsors for today's program. You read about this constantly. All over the world, companies hit by ransomware attacks have their valuable digital files held hostage and are forced to decide whether to pay cyber criminals to get them back. Well, Ignite is the first ever file system with sophisticated ransomware detection and recovery tools that are fully baked in. Behind the scenes, Ignite gives companies with limited IT, those are folks like you, limited security staff, much of the power of much larger teams. With Ignite, you know exactly where key documents are and who has access. I was like contemplating, like, how would we roll this out in our office? And we have nothing, we have no key documents in this office. Mm. Take that. But if we did, this is exactly, this product is made exactly for companies like ours. It automatically detects more than 2,000 ransomware variants, flags unusual behavior, no on-site hardware or software needed, shut down compromised accounts, quickly identify and restore encrypted files, all from a single cloud-based platform. If ransomware does sneak through, you can restore your files fast and be back up and running in hours, not days, without having to pay the bad guys one penny. I don't think people realize how widespread this is, because more often than not, small business will just pay. Mm. With Ignite, you don't need a specialized security ops team to keep up. The system is always learning and adapting to new threats. Learn more about how Ignite can protect your business from ransomware, or see why Ignite is rated number one for data security by real customers in G2 Crowd. Start your free trial today at Ignite.com, EGNYTE.com. That's EGNYTE.com. Oh, use this, well, every day. I got some right here. I drank some last night because, you know, last night was my birthday.
Mm.
I indulged.
I had some last night, too.
Now, one of the things about the cooler weather, apparently, it makes it easier to miss signs of dehydration, like overheating or perspiration. Those are ways that you know, but it, you still don't know you're dehydrated. It gets super dry at night now with all that dry heat we got going, cranking in those old buildings that we live in around here. You got to keep yourself properly hydrated. One stick of liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates faster and more efficiently than water alone. Plus, liquid IV tastes great with flavors like watermelon, strawberry, lemon, lime. Or today's option for me, tangerine.
Oh.
I want the immunity. They get, you know, extra vitamins in that. If you're enjoying a few extra drinks now that the holidays are approaching, like Sam Cedar's birthday or Mike Cernovich Day, like I did celebrating last night, Liquid IV has what you need. Drinking some today. Drank some last night before I went to bed. Feeling pretty good. Liquid IV contains 5 essential vitamins, more vitamin C than an orange, and as much potassium as a banana. It's healthier than sugary sports drinks. There are no artificial flavors or preservatives and less sugar than an apple. It's got the optimal ratio of glucose, sodium, and potassium. It delivers water and nutrients into the bloodstream. And the company has donated over 4 million servings in response to COVID-19. Products are being donated to hospitals, first responders, food banks, and more. Check it out, folks. We all use Liquid IV in here. For me, I drink it daily during the course of the show, and then I'll have a packet or two if I overindulge or feel a little dried out. Grab your favorite Liquid IV flavors nationwide at Walmart, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com. Use the code MajorityRep at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order, and you get better hydration today using promo code MajorityRep at liquidiv.com. And lastly, I mentioned up top that we've got this thing going with Sunset Lake. And they had come to me and they had said, you know, what charity do you want to donate to?
Mm-hmm.
And my, you know, we donate to a bunch of different places over the course of the year. But for my personal one and you know, what I encourage the kids to do when they want to give money to charity is to give directly. And the way I found give directly is by going to givewell.org. So you want to give to a charity, hard to know exactly how your money's going to be used. If you want help, and you want evidence-backed, high-impact charities, check out givewell.org. GiveWell spends over 20,000 hours a year researching charitable organizations and only recommends a few of the highest-impact, evidence-based charities they've found. Over 50,000 donors have used GiveWell to donate more than $750 million. That's going to save tens of thousands of lives and improve the lives of millions more. The best part, GiveWell is free. They publish all of their research and recommendations on their site for free, no sign-up required. They allocate your tax-deductible donation to the charity you choose without taking a cut. So, for me, I found Give Directly via GiveWell. I don't know if they're related. I don't think they are. Most of the charities up there have nothing to do with the word give. Mm. But Give Directly, for me personally, there's a lot of data that basically says if you give people living in extreme poverty money directly, they know best how to spend it in a way that will improve their lives, long term, short term. But there are other charities there. And, you know, one of the things you want when you give to a charity is you want the money to have as much impact per dollar as possible. And so for, you know, Hanukkah, what we do is we have one night where the kids, instead of getting a present, I take that money and we donate it to a charity of their choice. So we go onto that site. And usually off of that site, my kids will make their choice. Saul's, you know, It's all like, you know, to give to animals, but that's still good. But nevertheless, if you've never donated to GiveWell's recommended charities before, you can have your donation matched up to $250 before the end of the year or as long as matching funds last. So to claim your match, go to givewell.org and pick podcast, and to enter the Majority Report with Sam Cedar at checkout, you will have your donation matched by $250. So make sure that they know that you heard about GiveWell from the Majority Report to get your donation matched. Check it out, givewell.org. All right. So I want to just briefly touch on two stories that we missed at the end of the week. And that would be the Arbery case and what happened with Unite the Right. In Virginia, a jury awarded more than $26 million in damages after finding the white nationalists who organized and participated in a violent 2017 rally. I think we all remember that. And we also know that Heather Heyer was murdered via car. The jury in the federal trial said it could not reach a verdict on two federal conspiracy claims. So they are liable on a state conspiracy claim and one other claim. And, you know, this is one of the ways that you fight this stuff. Are these people ever going to see this money? No. But half of the $24 million in punitive damages were awarded against this guy, James Alex Fields, who sped his car through those protesters. In addition, the jury awarded punitive damages against some of the organizers, Kessler and Jason Kessler, Matt Hainbeck, Richard Spencer, Cantwell got $700,000. Hainbeck got $500,000. I don't know if they'll ever be able to pay it, but it is a way to discourage them from making money at their business of being white nationalists. You know, this type of stuff you'll see more of. I would be surprised if we don't see a civil case against
Rittenhouse.
Yep. I'd be very surprised.
I believe there is one ongoing. I could be wrong.
Yeah. And you have a...
Actually, I'm sorry. I want to correct myself quickly. I believe it's a civil case against the police department for aiding
That's
Rittenhouse.
Right. But I wouldn't be surprised if you saw one against Rittenhouse himself.
Yeah.
Because the standards in a civil case, the threshold to find them guilty of something is obviously lower than it is in a criminal case. But we shall see. So just wanted to give you an update on that. And obviously the Ahmaud Arbery murder verdicts, the three defendants, Travis McMichael, guilty on all counts, Gregory McMichael, guilty on all but one count, and William Bryan, similarly, mostly guilty on most of those counts. And this is a story of a guy who was jogging through a neighborhood. The defendants, you know, none of the facts in the case were disputed in terms of, you know, much of it was on video. And guys jogging through a neighborhood had supposedly been seen suspiciously jogging through that neighborhood before or walking through that neighborhood or, you know, on a construction site looking around at stuff. That was not that day. And so, of course, they got into their truck and chased him down with guns and shot him. And there's a lot of things that you can take away from that case. And again, like, you know, I don't, as a matter of policy, and I don't look at how cases are adjudicated as they're happening. But, you know, these cases have, they send messages, they're bellwethers as to, you know, how functioning our legal system is. They also claimed a self-defense defense.
Yeah.
And, you know, people have to contemplate the idea that, like, I could take a gun, get up into somebody's face for no reason, and if I'm all of a sudden scared that they're going to attack me, then I shoot them dead and self-defense. I mean,
And if the victim of the murder has a gun, then I'm sure it's like a heads you win, tails heads I win, tails you lose situation. Like, oh, that's more reason to fear for your life.
Whoever's dead,
yeah,
they were the one who was threatening the person who had to kill them because they were threatening them.
Our self-defense laws largely are set up to aid and abet this kind of vigilanteism
but
white people.
That vigilanteism wouldn't work if that was like a Trump protest, for instance, and some guy got in your face and tried to disarm you and you iced him. I'm guessing you'd probably go down for that.
How about this case coming out of Kenosha as well? Crystal Geyser, a black teenager who was essentially coaxed into sex trafficking when she was underage by a white man. She killed him in Kenosha and is being tried right now for that murder. I mean, that's like what people are putting up against the Rittenhouse case, but right. That's just another example of how self-defense only really applies to a certain segment of the population.
And just overall, like, guys deciding, oh, I'm in the clear to kill now, it's hard for me to divorce that from the context of America, where we were never able to pass anti-lynching legislation in this country, because that was politically impossible.
Yeah, right.
All right, so just contemplate this. The idea, and again, I didn't watch the specifics of the case, but just broadly speaking, the idea that a man jogging down a street and is chased ostensibly because he doesn't look like he belongs there, he being black, the chaser's looking being white, he's killed, has no weapon, it's all on video. And imagine the things you can glean from the idea that these people were convicted. And note that the jury was mostly white, all white.
Mm-hmm. They weren't swayed, it seems, by the toenails argument.
Oh, yeah, that he had dirty toenails, which,
so
of course,
deserved it. Great. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Imagine what, and also recall that you had all these public statements, or I should say these statements by the defense lawyers, like, we don't need more black preachers coming in here and sitting, you know, on the side of the family that's grieving. Imagine how what you could take away from this verdict. I think you could say, like, well, okay, there are situations where a blatant killing of somebody is held to account. And there are actually 12 white people, I don't know how many people on the jury, maybe 11, who can actually find that to be the case. That's one takeaway you could have. Here's another takeaway. This one is from Tulsi Gabbard. Do we have that?
So the jury in the Arbery case got the verdict right today, just like the jury got the verdict right in the Rittenhouse case. These jurors are our peers. They're our fellow Americans. And these verdicts show in both these cases how these jurors had the intelligence and the honesty to make the right decision based on examining evidence and facts, not based on race or politics. So these examples directly undermine the woke narrative that Americans are stupid and racist. Because if America was a racist country, like some people say that it is, Arbery's killers would not have been found guilty by a nearly all-white jury in Georgia. Now, most Americans, people of all races, truly believe in and are inspired by Dr. Martin Luther King's adage that we are all God's children. And as such, we should judge each other based on the content of our character, not the color of our skin.
That's how you know she's completed that full right-wing turn, right? When she's just, like, bastardizing MLK. They love that. It's a rite of passage on the right.
And we should also say, this is not like, whoa, I got to get on the phone and do this. This is a campaign, actually, that she's running here. She did the same thing. She tweeted out more or less the same thing. She went on TikTok. This is her way of her signaling that because the Ahmaud Arbery verdict was guilty, it proves, here it is, the jurors for both, Arbery's murders would not have been found guilty by an overwhelming white jury in the Deep South if America was a racist country. Now, think about how absurd that is. that for America to be a racist country, you could never have, even in the most blatant of instances, a white jury convict white people of murdering a black person. Just the, just like even like a child understands that that's not the case, right? I mean, even a child. And so you have to start to examine, like, you know, like what is she doing here? And let's play just a couple of examples of her saying stuff that seems to be in contradiction to this. But this was back when she wasn't.
If she existed in her current form in 2008, she would have said when Obama got elected, it ended racism in America. It's kind of like same stuff, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
And but here she was back in what, 2016, 2020? When is it she ran? When is,
she ran in 2016.
Put up
in 2020. Geez.
What's your response?
I want to bring the conversation back to the broken criminal justice system that is disproportionately negatively impacting black and brown people all across this country today.
How could that happen? Why would that happen? It's not a racist country. Maybe she didn't realize at that time that when those guys killed Ahmaud Arbery, that they would be convicted. So, I mean, are we not a racist country if our criminal justice system is unfair to black and brown people? I don't know what would you call that?
A lot of things changed since then, right?
That was almost a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
It's not like the Southern jury rules. What is it? At what point does she say, like,
here she is, criminal justice reform must include strategies for dismantling the systemic racism that causes black men to disproportionately receive harsher sentences compared to other races and ethnicities for the same types of crime. That was in 2019.
We should get her on record on when she thinks the jury roles in the South became, you know, not racist at all. But one just detail here. This is from First Coast News out of Brunswick, Georgia. It took the police 74 days to arrest Ahmaud Arbery's killers. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation says the primary reason for this delayed justice is former Brunswick District Attorney Jackie Johnson. For her alleged role in preventing a proper investigation, Johnson, 49, was indicted September 8th by a Glynn County grand jury on charges of violation of an oath of a public officer. So even this case,
right,
not exactly the smooth sailing one you'd want as a model.
I think the tweet should be, despite the fact that this is a racist country, the Ahmaud Arbery case gives us some hope that there is an opportunity for justice to be served. That would be it. But I am not essentially trying to build my Substack or get on.
Well, this
Dave
is why
Rubin's
we have to
show,
be discerning. This is why we have to be discerning about, like, the kinds of people we bring into the tent of the left, because just because she went on stage and she had a moment of critiquing Kamala Harris from ostensibly the left, right? No, there is an appetite for criticizing Democrats and an audience for that, and they're not as concerned about the substance of it. And that's why she was able to build up credibility with this very same crowd and able to move to the right in the way that she, you know, is doing right now.
There's a nice Wikipedia page that you might want to look up. Racial discrimination in jury selection. Just look that up, Tulsi.
Right.
All right. Briefly, Omicron. There's not much to be said about Omicron at this point.
Except to do it in a fun voice.
Yes.
Omicron.
Except to complain, like, is there, have we been able to establish there was an epsilon? Like, I understand why they didn't do the nu and u, which is a Greek letter, because that would be confusing. But why not epsilon, right? I mean, didn't we also have a lambda at one point that was in Latin America? I don't understand. I just feel like you should go in order. And beyond that, all we know about the Omicron at this point is
there was an epsilon variant.
Oh, there was? Okay, yep. That's probably it. We've gone through these. And so, you know, the good news is the variants they don't get named unless they're significant in some fashion or they're measured. And they don't always turn out to be worse. It is quite possible, and again, the data, it's so early on this data, that it is, you know, you've heard anecdotal claims of its transmittability is like enough to go across the hall in a shut a hotel room door. But you've also heard that its impact for vaccinated people is less than even Delta in terms of illness. So it's conceivable you could have a more communicable but less virulent strain, which could overtake, let's say, the Delta strain and, I don't know, begin to wind it down. The bottom line is, though, is that this is indicative of a problem that we have in the world, which is the U.S. government, frankly, the German government, other governments, but particularly U.S., which protects the patents of the Moderna and at least to some extent the Pfizer vaccine, particularly the Moderna, which we spent billions in developing. We need to take that over. Like, the days of encouraging are done.
The days of donations are done.
We need to say, in South Africa, they'd have the ability to pump out Moderna in a year if Moderna gave them the formula. It's going to take them 3 years to develop a sort of to reverse engineer it. We need, as a government, to get them to basically say your patent protections are a function of our government. They don't exist in nature. And in this instance, we need not just the formula, but also the best practices on how to develop it. All of it. All of it. A, because we paid for it. B, not just because we paid for it, but because that's what we're demanding.
And also C, because it's not like the executives at Moderna and Pfizer having gotten enormously rich off of this already. They just want more of the pie, and they have to answer to shareholders who don't want the profits to stop anytime soon. But like, it's kind of the way that we deal with climate change internationally as well. Oh, we take it very seriously, and we don't want anyone to die from it, but we're not going to proactively cut into the profits until the very, very last minute, if we do it at all, of these major corporations in order to make it happen. It's necessary to waive IP to stop these variants.
And, you know, as a political matter, Joe Biden is perceived, I think a lot of what Joe Biden's political problems at this point, they're basically of two types. One is Democratic base is beginning to feel like they got nothing done, and that Biden has not delivered on many of the campaign promises that he had. And the other is people afraid that he's not up to the task in terms of dealing with COVID. That may or may not be fair. But one of the ways that you can signal that you're doing that is by trying to end the pandemic around the world. Because if you end the pandemic around the world, it ends here.
He can't think that. I mean, he's not. He doesn't seem necessarily capable of thinking that expansively.
Well, there's certainly people in his administration, I would imagine, who understand this concept. But it is just that the protecting the patents.
Well, he's come out in favor of it 2 days ago. For the first time in 7 months, he had another public statement about I'm in favor of waiving vaccine IP. But that doesn't
get more aggressive.
Read Sarah Lazar's reporting it in these times. There's internal documents that show that basically they're not really pushing much behind the scenes. He sees it as something that he can use as a little bit of crumbs to throw to the left to make it seem like he's taking this seriously. But when it comes to actually putting pressure on, say, like Angela Merkel or these other governments that are being really proactive in protecting vaccine IP, like, he has to be applying pressure. He seems uncomfortable doing that domestically with Build Back Better, and he seems uncomfortable, obviously, doing that internationally.
Yeah, saying it is not relevant.
He's a press release president.
Yep. And so, I mean, this is the only way that this thing is going to end at the final analysis, is that we're going to have enough vaccine for the rest of the world. And we can get boosted all we want, but if you allow this race to be lost between vaccinating the world and variants, it doesn't matter how many boosters we get.
I mean, and we're appealing to his self-interest here too, right? Like,
yep.
It is in everybody's self-interest to end the pandemic. And the only way that we're going to be able to do that is to waive vaccine IP.
So just finally, an update on the Build Back Better. Apparently now it is undergoing a bird rule scrutiny in the Senate. Reconciliation dictated by the bird rule. Two elements of the bird rule. One, things need to be more or less deficit neutral when you're doing it through reconciliation. This bill, I think, has been deemed to be more or less deficit neutral. And B, it must have a material impact on the U.S. budget. And so the parliamentarian slash president, I think is what they call the parliamentarian, right?
President parliamentarian.
President parliamentarian.
Lord parliamentarian.
Who is, again, just hired by the party that runs the Senate. That's all. It's not even like a, it's not even a position that isn't a function of the political party. So just contemplate that for a moment, folks. And so we're waiting on the parliamentarian to tell us what we can have in this stripped down Build Back Better bill. No word on where Manchin or Sinema is these days, although the big take now seems to be that Sinema is open to negotiating things if she gets stuff she wants, supposedly. Manchin is, I don't know if he's still worried about inflation, but oil prices are coming down. And so we'll see what his latest excuse will be. We will give you updates as the week goes on. We also have a continuing resolution that the House is poised to pass in a day or two, punting to December. We also got the debt ceiling, which is supposedly going to arise in 2 weeks, according to Janet Yellen. We also have the National Defense Authorization Act, where we somehow find an extra $35 billion for the military, even though they didn't ask for it. So you're talking about an $8 trillion bill over the course of 10 years. And that's a minimum, unless anybody cuts it back. $8 trillion. All right, going to head into the fun half. Yeah, here we are. That's the way we roll, folks. I don't need to do any of that other stuff. I don't need to. There's no peacock around here anymore. I need to do that. I'm not swimming in.
We're no longer swimming in.
Swimming in Comcast money. So forget about it. Folks, just. Oh, shoot. I meant to do this up front. All right. Well, for those of you who stay to the end of the show, you're going to get a little bonus today.
Wow.
I'm going to drop a name of one of the people. And we're still, incidentally, in terms of the Majority Report live show. Send us an email. Tell us where you're coming from. We're still doing a little bit of a contest. The longest person, the furthest away.
Oh, I didn't hear about this.
Oh, I guess that happened last week. Do we have those emails? You have those emails, right, Bradley? Do you remember what the so far where we were at? I can't remember what it was, but I can't remember. You got it, though. So send it in. We got people coming from Pennsylvania, but then we got people coming from Canada.
Oh.
And then we got people coming from, like, far away in Canada.
We'll have some California, too.
We're going to have some California.
It's in Hawaii.
Hawaii?
Yeah, I thought someone said in the IMs last week Hawaii, but we'll have to confirm.
We need the proof. You can't just claim.
You can't reveal, Bradley, yet that Tulsi Gabbard is going to be our special guest on the show.
Emma,
you really just, like, totally screwed the pooch here.
Anyways, folks.
Yeah.
There's also some people who are going to be coming from Boston there. One of those people is a man named Larry Murphy, friend of the show, about as Boston as you can get. And he's going to come, you know, we're going to have some fun. This show's not all just going to be about talking politics. It's going to be also about having some fun. Larry Murphy, the voice of like 10 characters on the what is that show?
Bob's Burgers,
yeah. And he also was the guy who played Assy McGee in Assy McGee. I did a guest spot on Assy McGee back in the day. I think he played Assy McGee. Well, that's one of the things maybe we could
ask. Is that still on Peacock?
No, that's not on Peacock. That was never on Peacock. And also, a former Boston resident, but Massachusetts guy. What is it? H. John Benjamin will be there. Yep. And now I've had some problems with him in the past, H. John Benjamin. He's going to be at the show a lot of people wonder, why would you ask somebody who you have such a thorny relationship with the show? Because I want to show people back in Boston that I'm bigger. I'm a bigger person than other people.
Right.
Like John.
Yeah.
I'm physically bigger. I'm emotionally bigger. I am.
Physically bigger in what way? And emotionally bigger in what way?
Well, I'm taller.
Oh, okay.
Stronger. Heavier.
And emotionally bigger, just like more broad or you
just
know?
Have more emotional depth, more emotional IQ, whatever that's called.
Yeah, right. My emotional kind of contradicting yourself there, but emotional intelligence.
I have more humility, more honesty, more of everything than John Benjamin does.
I have the biggest emotions.
And but he's going to be at the show too. Now we're going to have other guests. We're going to have people who, you know, like policy guests, and maybe, I don't know. We're working on it, but there's going to be plenty of us there too. And there's going to be plenty of you. There's still some seats, quality seats. There are still some quality seats left. You can go to majoritylive.com to get your tickets. Majoritylive.com. Right now, the plan is you got to be vaccinated. You got to be masked. I believe that's the situation. If for some reason we get up there and it's like, oh my God, how did COVID go away? But, you know, so if that's a hesitation, just check with the Wilbur. That's what our policy is going to be. Want to protect everybody. Before any of us go into that place, we're going to take multiple antigen tests.
Mm-hmm.
And so come. It should be fun. Should be fun. It's going to be, I'm super psyched just to see everybody. It's going to be like a coming out party. This is going to be the biggest like event that I've been to, I would say since COVID, probably like 5 or 6 years before COVID, 10 years, 12, 15, 25. This could be the biggest event in my entire life.
Wow.
So folks, don't forget, you can also support this program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Your support keeps this show alive. On Mike Cernovich Day, I got to say thank you to our members because, honestly, there was one or two moments where I was scared that they were going after our advertisers. I was like, I'm going to get fired from MSNBC. Who cares about that? But I was worried about, like, for about 3 seconds until, like, the members just sort of roared back. And so thank you to everybody who's supported this show, whether it's been for months or for years. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Really appreciate it. And Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekien media universe?
Go check out last week. We had a discussion with Lillian Cicerci of the What's Left of Philosophy podcast. We talked about, is Marxism deterministic? And is it kind of... is it intellectually constrained in that way? And the answer is no. So check that out. Patreon.com/leftreckoning. We got Paul Prescott on this week on Wednesday.
Paul Prescott?
He's running for office, a Jacobin contributor running for office in Pennsylvania.
Oh, that's exciting.
Very cool.
Also, we got new merch, I think, right? Shop.majorityreportradio.com. Check it out.
We do?
I think we do. You might. Getting some pencils, stuff like that. All right, folks, see you in the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh, no. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman!
and the alpha males are back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar! What a fucking nightmare!
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Denner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See, white people doing drugs, they look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Snowflakes says what?
What?
Snowflakes says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
Matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on!
Fuck them. Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on.
What?
Come on.
What?
Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.